This is Ethan,
Nathan,
and Jeremy.
We are from Gamers Haven Podcast, and you are listening to
GBNcom.com, the Goblin Broadcast Network.
Gilroy 2.0 is here. Gilroy 2.0 is everywhere. Gilroy 2.0 is delighted. He just rolled a natural 20. Listening to The Tome.
Welcome to The Tome, episode 41. The Tome is a D&D news, reviews, and interviews podcast, and I am your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. In this episode, we will be dodging through the alleyways of Complete Scoundrel. Welcome again to episode 41 of The Tome, Complete Scoundrel. This review is actually brought to you by Patrick from Australia, who sent me in a wonderful written review. And so I've been actually sitting on this for a while, and I'm glad to bring it to you now. It's a fairly long written review, and so I'm going to get to it pretty quick here. So I'm not going to waste a lot of time chit-chatting at this time. So let's just jump right into it. Here is Complete Scoundrel, a review by Patrick from Australia, but read by me. The Complete Scoundrel by Mark McArthur and Wesley Schneider. To be honest, I bought this book on a whim. It was in the shop, and I impulse bought it. And when I first got home and the Saturday afternoon shopping trance left me, I regretted its purchase. I have The Complete Adventurer, and I loathe it. It is a ragtag book, which is mainly prestige classes, which don't deserve to be classes at all. Alright, I'm being harsh, but it is second on my most hated book list. First is Deities and Demigods. I used to love the book, but it has paled in comparison to what some wrongly describe as the sequel to The Adventure. The Complete Scoundrel offers the breadth of a slightly roguish, innovative, or intuitive character rather than just your standard pre-packaged rogue. That is what I love about this book. It takes characters of any class and race and really makes them something individual, other than just being another lockpicking, sneak-attacking Lita clone. Chapter 1 has two distinct functions. Its first is to define a scoundrel, and it does this well. The book defines a scoundrel as a character who does not do things by the book. A character who makes decisions on gut feelings. A character who trusts his luck. A character who is bold, reckless, and improvises. And if that is not clear enough, it goes on to list examples of scoundrels from a variety of sources, from Greek legends to the TV series Firefly. It provides so many examples, you have to recognize at least one of them. The second part provides information on turning a character of any class or race into a scoundrel. It first outlines each of the player's handbook base classes, and then goes on to list scoundrel classes from other sources, for example, the original Complete series. It even covers the Paladin in one section, which is a great way to expand on a class with very little room for customization. It then lists scoundrel archetypes, the Acrobatic Scoundrel, the Arcane Scoundrel, the Aggressive Scoundrel, and many more. Why, there is even a Psionic Scoundrel. These archetypes are not classes, they are not game material, but guides to consider when creating a scoundrel. They provide information as to what feats, skills, spells, prestige classes, and even warlock invocations a character playing one of these archetypes should consider. This section really highlights something I love about this book. Many books are written assuming that the players only own the player's handbook. This book caters for whatever resources you own. It includes everything short of Incarnum to Tome of Battle material, yet can also be used by someone who only owns the player's handbook. Chapter 2 covers an old favorite of the Complete series, prestige classes. Yet, these are not badly defined classes who fill simply a generic hole in the world. These are fully rounded prestige classes, better than I have seen. Here are some of my favorites. The first class, the Avenging Executioner, is a serial killer or murderer who is tragically wronged and has sworn vengeance. They use fear as well as their blade to get the job done. Second is the Battle Trickster, one of the three trickster classes which use the new skill trick rules, presented in the next chapter. These are hardly defined at all, with really no signature abilities, but this is not really a bad thing because they serve a different role to any other prestige classes. They're more of an add-on. You get for a couple of levels a fighter who is a battle trickster will still get his base attack progression and feats, but more skill tricks related to abilities as well. The Cloaked Dancer is pretty much a cross between an assassin and a bard. They distract their foes with their enchanting dance ability and then surprise strike them. It is actually quite a cool chance for the usually undervalued bard to really make a difference on the battlefield. The Combat Trapsmith is fourth. Members of this class can knock up traps as a full round action. The traps, however, run on a different system to DMG traps and are picked from a list of 12 traps made to cater for this class. A combat trapsmith learns one per level, a little like spells. The next prestige class is the Gray. It is a paladin who is given the freedom to use less valiant methods to uphold his or her faith's values. This is not an alternative to the Black Guard, as a character must remain lawful good and still atone for some misdeeds. The game has needed a class like this for a long time, and finally, paladins get some room to move. The Malinvoker allows a good character to use summoned fiends for a noble cause. It is about tricking fiends into doing your bidding. It is a fabulous class, which should be considered by any good aligned spellcaster who is a fan of the Conjuration School. Psybond Agent is a class which allows a psionic character to get a taste of the action. They are able to see through the eyes of others and eventually control them. He or she is like a chess player using her pawns to maneuver enemies. They also gain sneak attack. The downside? No psionic power progression. Spell Warp Snipers warps area spells into rays so that they are able to use their sneak attack and a whole lot of feats which are usually unable to be applied to area spells. For example, a Fireball Ray, which deals +2 damage thanks to Weapon Specialization Ray. Snipers also gain access to Sudden Ray Strike, which is essentially Sudden Strike for Ray spells. With D6 hit die, Cleric-based attack bonus, and full spell progression, why would any wizard not take this class? Last is the Uncanny Trickster. It is a prestige class for those who do not fit the archetype for Battle Trickster or Magical Trickster. Not detailed, as the others are very similar. It uses a new approach to prestige classes. As I mentioned, these classes are more of an add-on to the base class rather than a self-contained prestige class. Yet, this class takes the role to new levels. It allows a character to advance in its previous class features in the same way that classes like the Archmage allow spellcasters to advance spell levels. This is a system which should be used more in the future. The class also allows access to generic skill trick related abilities, which can be customized to a certain role through skill trick selection. Chapter 3 lists skill tricks and feats. It introduces two new systems and expands on one which is very underused. The first is luck feats. These allow a player to control the power of luck, good or bad. Each feat gives a character a different luck related ability, most often a reroll on a certain check, though there is one which allows you to turn a natural 1 on attack roll to a natural 20. Turn those critical fumbles into critical hits. The second new system is the skill trick system. It allows the player the opportunity to spend 2 skill points to gain an ability related to a skill they already have. Initially, I couldn't understand the system, as I viewed them a little like a weaker version of feats. Feats were deliberately designed to distance themselves from skills, and as such, a blending of the two was so barbaric that it belonged in AD&D. However, I have slightly modified the system to fit into my home game, and it now works fine. The last system is not new, but it is criminally underused. They are ambush feats. They allow you to swap a certain amount of sneak attack damage. They allow you to swap a certain amount of sneak attack damage die for a cool effect. For example, constitution damage or hindering the attacker's speech. Chapter 3 is filled with new spells, and it certainly uses the new polymorph subschool well. Polymorph spells allow the caster to change into a certain creature for its duration. It removes the complication of the polymorph spell from the game. Some of my favorite spells are Smoke Stairs. This spell allows you to climb a pillar of smoke as if it were a flight of spiral stairs. Create Fetch creates a duplicate of the caster, which is non-functional in combat, but follows mundane telepathic orders with ease. Blockade creates a 5-foot cube of wood. They are multi-purpose and allow for the improvisation of the character, which already has the portable hole and has destroyed the folding boat by using it to bring down a castle wall. They really embody what a scoundrel is. My favorite part of any good book is the equipment. And this book really delivers on the cool, mundane equipment, which allows for the creativity and adaption. Cool uses of a portable hole or Qual's Feather token are pretty much widely known throughout the D&D community. Whereas, with magical items, people only think about magical properties. Mundane improvisation really makes a scoundrel think about the item itself. What it looks like and what it's made of, that kind of thing. The book delivers with new hidden spaces, from the fake barrel bottom to hollowed out boot heel. There has to be something here a scoundrel will find handy. This is a really good idea because DMs have been playing with hidden spaces since the game's humble beginnings. Gems hidden in a false bottomed barrel, throne which conceals a map in a compartment under the upholstery, etc. And these rules allow a player to take control of this element of the game. Next, it details crossbow bayonets, and to be honest, I found this to be a bit of a letdown. We have been dreaming of these rules for years, and finally, when they are published, they fall short. No rules for firing and stabbing. The character using the bayonet on the end of a heavy crossbow can apparently fight as well as if they had a spear. Although they were probably just trying to simplify it, they went a step too far. This is a rule I will never use, and I feel is a bit out of place in this wonderful book. Next is a staple of any supplement, magic items. There are many magic items here, which are pure gold. The aspect mirror, which allows one person to talk face-to-face with another, and blade shimmer, a liquid which, when applied to a weapon, turns it invisible. I didn't really like the Wheel of Fortune, a big wheel you roll to get random bonuses. I just can't imagine any scoundrel in their right mind entering combat armed with a 1-foot by 1-foot wheel in a wooden box. It isn't cool enough for Malcolm Reynolds or Han Solo or Blackbeard. Don't get me wrong, there are many fantastic items here, but this one I think isn't cool enough for a scoundrel. The chapter provides some nice new poisons. They are designed to have cooler effects than the DMG poisons. For example, one gives the enemy vulnerability to fire, one gives a divine caster -1 caster level, and one must be brewed using the blood of the intended target. These are a good alternative, though are only a feasible option at around level 7 or 8. At these levels, though, they can really add an extra dimension to play. Add to this new alchemical items, which are really, really useful, and there are enough chemicals to kill or bolster any scoundrel. The last section of the chapter is devoted to living items, harnessing plants or animals to use as adventuring gear, including planar motes, which can mask alignments, and a rust monster wand, which allows you to eat your way through metal with the help of rust monster larvae. It is a great way for a DM to regulate gear, as eventually these creatures will die. The final chapter is a mixture of fluff and crunch. It provides ideas for scoundrel adventures by helping a DM adapt the archetypal adventures type, for example, rescue the princess, and provide ideas on the types of adventures a scoundrel might take part in, for example, an assassination. It adds a DMing with scoundrel section, which is meant to address a problem which makes DMs hate scoundrels. When a scoundrel makes an unplanned action which makes your hours of preparation useless, what do you do? It tells you to embrace it and throw them an easily persuaded ogre or a guard with an easy pocket to pick every once in a while. The chapter also provides new scoundrel organizations. Now, I have never been one for pre-made organizations, and as such, think they are a waste of space, but I could see them being useful if you like that sort of thing. A new concept, or at least a new name, is revealed in the next part of the chapter, Legendary Sites, which are basically magical locations. They admit that it is simply a different name for the same concept, so I forgive them. Besides, I think they did it for a good reason. It seems to fit the scoundrel theme more. I love these locations. In fact, even though I owned the Dungeon Master Guide 2, it was this book which inspired me to use magical locations. Contacts are next, and again, after so many books, you would think that they would provide some decent rules for contacts. But no. All they detail are more sample contacts. When will they learn that DMs can think up sample contacts themselves? All we want is a new system. At the end of the book are 100 scoundrel challenges, not unlike the adventure ideas which the DMG gave us. Lastly, they pack in some adaptable adventure sites, which are not associated with any particular adventure. They depict some archetypal adventuring venues. They are brilliant maps and can inspire adventures in themselves, from a black market in a sewer to an entire city of scoundrels. I love this book. It really shows up every other book I own in that it is the first to provide rules beyond the Valiant Knight, Sneaky Rogue, and Mystical Wizard. It provides so much depth to any character. In fact, every player in my campaign has enriched his or her character with an element of this book. It even allows your one-dimensional non-core classes a chance to break out of stereotypes. Warlocks don't even have to be the studded leather armor wearing servants of demons anymore. This book is absolutely essential for any DM or player. It is consistently brilliant and contains such deep and groundbreaking material in a way which even Eberron can't match. 4.5 stars. The only faults I can find are 2 or 3 rules which are not as rich as the others, and the fact that there is no index. 150 pages and purchased for $46 Australian. That's about $38 US. However, I would pay more than $60 Australian for a book of this quality. 157 pages plus ads and surveys. By Patrick from Australia. And that is a really fun review, and I'm sorry if I'm not the most fabulous reader in the world, but I think you get the idea. And Patrick has actually already talked to me a little bit about doing some recordings of his own and sending them along that way, so you don't have to hear my boring old voice all the time. Maybe we can get some other folks on here, and Patrick has chit-chatted maybe about doing some of that. So maybe we'll see that in the future, and if not, maybe we'll just get some more written reviews from Patrick, because I thought this was really, really well done. Perfect length, perfect amount of information. Great job, Patrick. That's The Complete Scoundrel. Now a quick promo from a show that I think you might enjoy.
Listen to The Tome's new episode on January 17th at thetomeshow.com. Host Jeff Greiner will be announcing the name of the next open design project and speaking with the author. Visit KobolQuarterly.com for information about open design and about Kobol Quarterly, the magazine of kobolds and dragons.
Okay, well, that's episode 41. As always, I urge and welcome listeners to help the show in any way you can. Some of the best ways is to participate or visit the Tome's Amazon store. Send in your emails or audio comments to thetomeshow@gmail.com, or let me know if you're interested in reporting for the show regularly. You can also dig the show at dig.com, vote for us at Podcast Alley, or leave an iTunes review. All of these things help the show get noticed, and I really appreciate that. Also, don't forget to consider checking out the Tome's Amazon store. The show gets a percentage of the proceeds, and that helps keep the show on the air. You're going to buy some of this stuff anyway, so you might as well check it out. All of this information, the forum, and more can be found on the website at www.thetomeshow.com. Also, don't forget to check out the Tome's partner podcast, Fistful of Comics and Games, at www.fistfulofcomics.com for all sorts of geeky goodness, and Gamers Haven at www.canadiancrusaders.com for some great GMly advice. This has been episode 41, Complete Scoundrel of
The Tome.